Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the House Transportation Committee meeting. Go ahead and call us to order at 1:02 in the PM. Today is March 15th, 2022. With us today is Representative McCabe, Representative McKay, Vice Chair Hannon, Representative Drummond, Representative Kronk, and myself, Representative Hopkins. We, in fact, have a quorum to do business today. Assisting with us today is our recording secretary, Leah Frazier, and our LRO moderator, Doug Bridges. Thank you. Any other questions before we move ahead? No. All right. Our first item today is going to be House Bill 366 on legislative approval for the Alaska Railroad bonds for replacement of the Seward passenger dock and terminal by the House Transportation Committee. It's a committee bill. With us today is Bill O'Leary, CEO of the Alaska Railroad, to make some brief comments and answer questions from the committee. We also have one amendment up for consideration, and we'll also take public comment on the bill and then look for the will of the committee. Mr. O'Leary, would you please come to the table, put yourself on the record, and provide any comments that you have and be available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and very happy to be here today. With me on the phone line is also Barbara Amy, our Railroad's Chief Financial Officer. So if there are questions that stump me, I will be looking to Barbara to help out here. Very brief remarks. I just want to, first of all, apologize for not being able to be here when House Transportation heard this initially, but I think I did watch the recording of it, and I think the railroad staff did a good job in conveying the importance of this project and of the bill. And it really is something we're very, very excited about, and something we think is going to be great not only for the state and the railroad, but just the visitor industry for this state. So with that, I know there were a number of questions that were asked at the previous committee meeting, I think many of which were answered, hopefully, to the committee satisfaction. If they weren't answered to the committee satisfaction, or if there are other questions, I certainly stand ready to address those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Leary. Do we have any questions for the presenter or the speaker? Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. I have a number of questions that pertain, so hopefully you'll indulge me, probably 10 different questions, if that's all right. But I can spread them out.
Certainly, we can always submit them also.
Yeah, that would be good. So I'm curious. I think we heard that this was a standing dock, not a floating dock. So there is no floating capability, which is, do I understand right, that the cruise lines like that or they don't like it?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. So the current design at this point is for a fixed dock as opposed to a floating dock, and that's been vetted with the cruise industry, and I think that's the most cost effective way to achieve what we're looking to do.
Okay, thanks for that. Through the chair.
We'll see if anybody else has any questions. Raise your hand and we'll interrupt.
All right. And the maintenance of the dock, railroad, you're going to contract out maintenance, cruise line going to maintain it. Who's going to do all the maintenance?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative McCabe, this would be something that it would be a mix. The railroad would be responsible for the maintenance, and probably to be determined. There'd be, I'm sure, a portion of it that would be contracted out, a portion of it that would be done with internal railroad forces.
Okay. And I know that the speaker would love me to ask this, so what about the marine highway use? There was some discussion at the last meeting about possibly using it at some point for the marine highway. Will it be available? Is it the best type of dock for the marine highway, or will we be stuck with a elevator kind of like the Tusty or something for to use that dock?
So through the chair, Representative McCabe. So as it is currently planned and designed, the passenger dock that is the subject of this bonding bill would not necessarily be suitable for the ferry usage without some significant modifications to that design. At this point, we believe a I mean, while that is certainly an option, but I think it could slow down the relatively tight time frame that we are on, our recommendation would be to look at modification of the freight dock, the railroad's freight dock, also in Seward, that is also undergoing a significant capital project. And if the desire was to include the ferry system in that, we would look at putting it at the freight dock.
Representative Drummond had a quick follow-up on that.
Yeah, the ferry used to stop in Seward. It was removed when, I believe, Robin Taylor moved the whole ferry operation to Ketchikan from wherever it was prior to that. Whatever it was, this dates back for an awfully long time. And I have somebody I could text to find out which ferry it was that stopped there regularly, who are retired ferry folks who live in Seward. But it was done, and there was a good reason for it. But I think that's a question better suited to the Marine Highway system and find out if that's someplace they want to go. They don't necessarily always want a ferry on a road system. They've already got it in Whittier, and it already goes to Homer. So another stop in Seward may or may not there may be a sense to it, but I don't know what that is.
So through the chair, I've actually ridden the ferry into Seward, and it was the Tustamina, mm-hmm. and they did a Kodiak Homer, Kodiak Seward. So they did it kind of like that, and I believe I wouldn't know. I thought we got off on the big dock, but it may have been the freight dock. It's a 30-year-old memory. So,
right. Mr. O'Leary. On that note, just to follow up, what would the railroad is redoing the freight dock there?
Yes, correct.
Thank you, Mr. O'Leary. And in order for it to be structured and designed to accommodate ferry vessels for the Marine Highway, what would the railroad be looking at? Are you planning on doing that? Do you need additional incentive or community involvement or legislative involvement to make that happen?
At this particular point, we are not planning on doing that. It's not part of the freight dock design or plan at this particular point. Again, if it was something that was of interest from the Marine Highway System and Department of Transportation, we'd have to engage with them about that and what modifications would need to be made to the current freight dock design. And of course, the larger question about is, again, stakeholder outreach and things of that nature also.
Certainly. And what's the time frame for redoing that freight dock?
The freight dock is also on a relatively short time frame in that I believe we are looking at trying to move that forward in the 2023 time frame, but design work is ongoing at this point.
Thank you. Representative McCabe has some questions.
Thanks. So that, several. Thank you, Chair Hopkins. So that brings up one of my other questions is, so the cruise ship dock, the freight dock, and Lowell Point all at the same time? Is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I am not entirely clear of Lowell Point is the university at this point. I don't know what their time frame is at this point.
I think I heard it's the same time. So if we're doing three projects, are we going to be able to do three projects in Seward, three sort of heavy-duty marine, and maybe this is outside of railroad executives' purview, but are we going to be able to do that in Seward all at the same time, all three of those, and accomplish what you need to, or are we going to look at delays for the, I think the main one you said was the cruise ship one, or the big dock?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I can only speak to the two docks that I'm most familiar with, but we are currently working on a sequencing plan for that because the freight dock is going to be integral for the for our construction of the passenger dock at this point. So to make sure all of that is very, very well coordinated, but I can't obviously speak to the Lowell Point project at this
point. So you and Ms. Pitney are going to be arm wrestling.
To be very clear, that would not go well for me.
So I just have a couple more questions, if that's okay, Chair Hopkins. What's the amortization schedule for this $60 million bond?
through the chair, Representative McCabe. At this point, we're modeling 30-year tax-exempt debt for it.
Thanks. And my next couple questions are pretty softball, I think. So which cruise ship line? They said it the other day. I just can't remember.
The chair, Representative McCabe. We're calling our anchor tenant is Royal Caribbean Lines and its subsidiaries.
So no Norwegian. They're going into Whittier, right? Is that what I understand?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, as we understand that Norwegian is looking to move to the new or proposed project in Whittier at this point. There are, I believe, a total of 17 brands that have called on Seward in the past, and we hope to attract those and new entrants to Seward.
Everybody gets cruise ships and docks except the Matsu. I'm frustrated.
Port of Fairbanks on the Chena. Yeah, on the Tantama.
I think that's all I had. Other than this doesn't have much to do with the docks. So I'm interested in how the Executive Budget Act that was dropped yesterday is going to affect all of this. And all of what's going on with the docks and the Whittier lease and all of that kind of thing.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. So we are still examining all of that at this particular point. The comment that I could make at this juncture is we think it would be highly detrimental to the railroad as it stands currently and could have significant negative effects on our ability to borrow funds
Representative Drummond, do you have a question?
I have a comment. I heard back from my friend in Seward. The Testamina was the one that serviced Seward. It docked where the Sea Life Center is now. And then it went to the railroad dock before bypassing Seward altogether. That happened sometime in the 90s.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Sea Life Center dock is gone. So whatever ferry stops there, obviously it worked at the railroad dock. And Representative Hannon and I witnessed the Testamina stopping at about six different docks in our trip this past summer. And it was in and out in an hour and unloaded a hell of a lot of freight, trucks, vehicles, sailboats. Remember the sailboat that got stuck on the elevator?
Yeah. Representative Cronk, you have a question?
A comment. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Comment referring back to the docks being built. I have people that live in Seward, and there is going to be absolutely zero housing available for the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. Zero. Mm-hmm. So some of these projects are going to be pushed to the limit of finding places for people to live.
Long commute from Anchorage. Thank you, Representative Cronk. Any other questions at this moment? All right. Seeing none. Next up, Mr. O'Leary, if you could stay where you are, we might have some questions on this. We have an amendment by Representative McCabe to move forward. So, Representative McCabe, you have amendment number one. Do I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment one.
All right. I will object for purposes of discussion. Representative McCabe, can you let us know what it does?
Sure. So this amendment just adds to the revenue bond $140 million essentially to finish the Port McKenzie rail spur. So one of the frustrations in many of my constituents' mind, in my mind as well, is the unfinished projects. I know Mr. O'Leary and I talked about it earlier. He's just as frustrated, and I understand that it's not all the railroad, but the railroad, if you will, when it's finished, will be the anchor tenant of the rail spur. I mean, they'll be the ones operating it. So it would seem that it's in their best interest to get it done. So I'm hoping to push the, as I said earlier, the titans of industry into finishing a project that we started that's languished for a number of years. And whether or not this amendment passes, I understand it'll have to go back through the board and and all that stuff, and we'll have to prove out the revenue. But an entity like the railroad gets revenue from a lot of sources, and it wouldn't just be the revenue from Port McKenzie that would be paying for the rail spur. It would be the aggregate revenue from the railroad. And I think that once it's a little bit of a if you build it, they will come kind of thing. Once we get nobody's going to build a business there right now with our history in Alaska of half finishing projects. No major industry is going to come and put their industrial park or put their cement building plant or put their power plant or whatever up there without us having the infrastructure that we need to support them. And so do we build it and then attract the industry, or do we try to get commitments first? And that's a little bit above my sort of education level. So I'm hoping by this amendment that we will signal that we are ready for business and that we will build the rail spur, because that's what railroads do, is they build rails. And there's also one in the Northern Rail Spur, and maybe they can help the Matsu and the military find their way forward to finish these two projects. This one would be important to start first, because once it's done, we could actually start earning revenue from it, because we have a barge dock that's usable right now, and with not much modification, we could put Panamax plus freighters in there, and we could use a yard crane to unload them if that's what it would take. But we could start the revenue stream, and as the revenue stream starts, people will start to build there. We're, as I told Mr. O'Leary earlier, we're contemplating another bill to designate that 14.5 square miles as a special opportunity zone. It's a federal zone, help attract the grant money, because now it's not just the Matsu, it's the once we get the rail spur, it's the Matsu and Fairbanks. So we would be a combined 105,000 plus 95,000, so we'd be a combined group of people of 200,000 that would benefit from this. And if we can even take it a step further into the combined Port Authority, now we include Anchorage and the Port of Anchorage, and professionally managed, we could be a very, very economical, infrastructure-driven state, and we would attract those types of businesses that could monetize some of our resources. So that's my idea, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. I think my question is for the maker of the amendment, Representative McCabe, but Mr. O'Leary may need to chime in. But how much money would the, with my understanding with the revenue bond, that you got to have some cash in hand to back up the bonds? How much is needed for $140 million? And who puts that up?
Good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Mr. O'Leary, do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. At this point, we have not identified any revenue that would support the Alaska Railroad being able to issue $140 million, or sufficient revenue that would enable the Alaska Railroad to issue $140 million worth of revenue bonds in support of this project.
So could I ask it in the inverse? Could you explain to us, so that we have it on the record, that when you sell a revenue bond, what makes it a revenue bond? So my understanding is you've got already anchor tenants who are going to pay for the use of the dock. So we're going to put up the $60 million, but the tenants are saying over the next 30 years they're going to pay you $60 million. Is that how the revenue bond works, or could you explain to us?
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Hannon. So generally, a revenue bond is, to be able to market a revenue bond out there, there certainly has to be a revenue source, most likely related to the project, that is going to generate sufficient revenues for the organization, for the issuer, to permit them to not only cover the, or pay the debt service, but also oftentimes, you know, a premium on top of that, some sort of coverage type of amount. So significant funds would be required to do that for $140 million revenue bond. In the case of the Seward project, that is why our excitement about having the Royal Caribbean as the anchor tenant, and we are currently engaged with them in finalizing a long-term berthing agreement, which will provide a significant portion of the security needed for us to successfully market those bonds.
And then, again, a follow-up. So, Representative McCabe, it's my understanding that the Matsu Borough and the railroad, not quite a decade ago, but almost a decade ago, put $180 million into the Port Mac extension, and the borough's interest in that waned, or where's the borough on finishing that project?
No, the borough's still interested, through the chair. The borough's still interested in it. The money waned, actually. The oil prices went down, and we couldn't get the money for it. As far as the revenue bond, we mentioned, and it's one of the reasons I asked about Norwegian, is we mentioned that the anchor tenant for this $60 million revenue bond in the route bill is one cruise line. And you heard Mr. O'Leary just say that there are 18 other cruise lines. Was that correct?
Different brands
that may use that. So if we are using one Royal Caribbean as an anchor tenant to guarantee $60 million, then with 18 other people to choose from, you would think that we could go forward and find other tenants, other revenue to support this.
Mr. O'Leary, could you describe for us, because I think there's probably none of us are as fluent with what it means that a brand, it may not be a separate cruise line, or could you describe a little bit more about the cruise industry and those leases and arrangements? So Royal Caribbean isn't just Royal Caribbean.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, thank you. So there are a number of different brands. Royal Caribbean has a couple of subsidiaries that also call on Seward at this particular point. And to be very clear, Royal Caribbean is the largest by quite an amount anchor tenant, for lack of a better term, that we anticipate being in Seward. And will also be the one at this point that is, again, signing up for a long-term berthing agreement to support the debt. Prior to this, most of our berthing agreements have been of a much shorter duration, but the longer term is needed to as support for the bonds.
Representative McKay, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hopkins. Just a couple obvious questions, not quite.
Sorry.
Just for the record, Representative Luisi was joining us at 1:23 p.m. So,
sure. Thank you, Chair Hopkins. Mr. O'Leary and Rep. McCabe, I'm not as familiar with the Port Mac to Houston. How much of that is already there? I understand most of it's already been built. So we're just talking about a little extension at the end to reach Houston. How much like mileage and cost are we talking about to just finish that? And it seems to me, as an engineer, if I was building that, I would have started building it in Houston, where the railroad already is. But they started building it from the port outward. I don't know. It seems like that's backwards, but a couple simple questions there. I don't know who wants to tackle it. But.
Through the chair, Representative McKay. So, there's a little bit of history. If I can go back on this, that's all right. So this is, again, was a Matsu Borough project that was envisioned back in the previous decade. And give or take, $180 million worth of state general funds were used, put into the project. And Matsu Borough effectively contracted with the Alaska Railroad because we can build rail and we're good at it. And we went and did, working with Matsu Borough through the environmental piece, the right-of-way piece, and building an embankment and some of the subgrade out there. So there is a significant amount of work has been done from Houston to the port. And it's I think it's, I can't remember, it's 36 or 39 miles all in there. So what's missing at this particular point is certainly there is no rail on it, and there is additional work that certainly that needs to be done. The latest estimate, and again, these are just more back of the envelope type of things. This is originally roughly a $325 million project. And we believe right now there is another $175 to $190 million worth of effort needed to complete the project. That's something that would need to be refined significantly if there's were to move forward. And to be very clear, you know, the Alaska Railroad is supportive of this project. We like infrastructure. We think the state needs additional infrastructure. Certainly, it's just been very much a matter of the funding, with the funding drying up, and it's kind of chicken or the egg here to some degree. If you don't have the project built, it's difficult sometimes for industry to understand what it's going to be and to figure out how they're going to use that. But it's also challenging sometimes to get industry engaged up front to then put the monies forward that we would need to be able to, in the case of going out and and taking debt on. The railroad has grown significantly over the years, but our balance sheet in no way, shape, or form could support taking on that kind of debt without any without incremental revenues.
Thank you. And I was going to offer you an opportunity to weigh in as the CEO of the railroad, but I think that sort of, if you have additional comments you want to make on the amendment, I think that does cover it.
Yes.
Okay. Representative McKay, do you have a question?
No, no questions. I just, this is, the railroad is important to us, to our development, to our food security. It's as important to Fairbanks as it is to the Mat-Su, in my opinion. I've said it before, but it's the gateway to the Arctic. You know, the Russians have 57 or 53 icebreakers. We have one. So if we have a deep water port that doesn't need dredging that we can get to and get it on the rail and get it started towards Fairbanks and where they put it on trucks and take goods north. And I also think that we have four out of the six military bases that would be elegantly supported by Port Mac in a Panamax size or Panamax plus size freighter. We can't do anything until we get the rail done. The rail is key to it, in my opinion, and in a lot of opinions. So I don't know the path forward. I get that it takes money, but it takes industry to be interested as well, similar to what they're doing in Seward, where they have now gone out and got an anchor tenant to support their revenue bond. So I'm wondering why the railroad can't find an anchor tenant or help the Mat-Su find the revenue to support a revenue bond amendment such as this.
Thank you. Representative Stoops.
Forgive my tardiness again. It seems to be a real habit here. But so I'm sorry. Maybe this question's already been asked before I got here. So if it has, forgive me, please. But is there a reason that the Mat-Su can't issue these revenue bonds? Why is it that the railroad needs to, as opposed to the Mat-Su?
Fair question, and I don't know the exact answer to that question other than the same issue that the railroad is having, essentially, is they can't really do anything with that port until they have a rail commitment, until they have a railroad coming in there. And he may have been gone when I was talking about this, but we're hoping that we can get a bill through to establish an exclusive economic zone, or what the feds call the special opportunity zone, to give some borough tax breaks anyways for industries that might go into Port Mac, might be interested. So the Mat-Su borough is working on it, but we don't have... we don't have necessarily the wherewithal right now, or the expertise either. So,
thank you. Representative McKay.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. To the chair, I just one more question regarding this. Is it seems like we could someone could apply for a grant through the new infrastructure bill to maybe get some funding from the federal government for this? Sounds like infrastructure to me.
Mr. O'Leary, did you want to take a stab at that? Or I don't know if it was a comment or a question. Yeah.
I'd be delighted. Through the chair, Representative McKay, it's certainly something that lends itself more to grant funding than it does at this particular time than debt financing. So, you know, to that end, certainly there are, opportunities, I think, in the still, as we continue to unpack the infrastructure bill out there for something like this. And I will note that, you know, the railroad actually partnered up with Matsu Borough and Fairbanks North Star Borough and I believe the utility, the gas utility up in Fairbanks, looking at trying to applying for a grant, a competitive grant, to see about, at least finishing the rail from the Titan gas plant to Houston and many other aspects of that, and with the goal to get LNG to Fairbanks. We were unsuccessful in that endeavor, but that's the kind of work I think we need to continue to do to, you know, really be able to push push this project forward, kind of get it to a critical mass where then you could actually perhaps, see the end and have it in more of a bite-sized financial piece.
Representative Hannon.
Representative Hannon. Thank you. Representative McCabe, you've used a term that perhaps from your Coast Guard back may have more, but my understanding is neither Port Mac nor the Port of Alaska in Anchorage meet the definition of a deep water port, that the depth there is not a deep water port. Do you know what the depth that Point Mac is?
Yep, 90 feet through the chair. It's 90 feet at high tide. At low tide, it's you still have, I believe they said, 30 feet under the keel of a Panamax plus freighter.
My understanding is that most of the docks that are being built are looking for substantially deeper than that when we're talking about deep water ports being built. And that's why the big cruise ships don't come into Anchorage, where most of their passengers will be disembarking anyways, but that's why they go into either Whittier or Seward, is that it's not deep enough in Upper Cook Inlet. Perhaps way down in Homer it'd be deep enough, but that doesn't get them any closer to the hubs of transit that they want to put them on.
So, through the chair, that's different from my understanding. 90 feet is well within the limits of a deep water port. All the pilots will tell you that 90 feet, that Port Mac is a deep water port and it doesn't need the dredging. I think Anchorage, the Port of Alaska, is about 30 feet after dredging. It seems to me that the last thing I heard was a Panamax plus freighter, draws about 45 feet of water. I'm not sure about the cruise ships. I can't imagine that they're any more than one of those freighters, but you could be right. But even drawing 45 feet of water with the tide fall in, and I haven't looked at it in months, I apologize, but with the tide fall in the Port Mac area, you would still have significant 30 feet under the depth, under the keel of a Panamax plus freighter.
Representative Drummond, do you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, thank you. I've been looking at my maps on my iPhone, and as near as I can tell, the what do you call the berm upon which the railroad tracks are put?
Embankment.
The embankment. It seems to be partly built between Point McKenzie and Houston, and it's about somewhere between 15 and 20 miles. At least. To me, this sounds like a good subject for a resolution of some sort. It also is really difficult to do without cooperation. And I know that the Matsu Borough Assembly and the Anchorage Assembly have met in the past. You may have heard about who suggested a port authority, a joint port authority, several weeks ago. Actually, we probably should ask to dialogue about this, but that's one of the things that I think would help, and then both ports could work together on what makes the most sense. if two states can do it, like in New York City, you know, New York and New Jersey operate the Port of New York, the Port Authority of New York. And the third item is Holland America restarted cruises to Alaska, stopping in Anchorage. They're 2-week-long cruises. They started, I want to say, around 2011. They don't currently have one scheduled, probably because they're still getting back up to speed after COVID. But they do stop in the Port of Anchorage. And I forget which ship it was, but they came for several summers. And it's not like here in Juneau. You can't just walk down to the dock and say hi to the cruise ships. You have to go inside port security, just like going through TSA at the airport. And you can barely see the cruise ship from downtown unless you're in the right spot on the bluff. So it's really interesting, but I do know that they do come, they already do come to that far up Cook Inlet.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative McKay, you have a question for the presenter or the sponsor of the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just information, 50 feet is required for a large container ship. Portland is 40 feet, Oakland is 50, and San Francisco is 50. So,
thank you.
90 is really deep.
So, Mr. O'Leary, does the railroad have a position on this, a positive or negative position on an amendment like this, putting the $140 million of the revenue bonds to the railroad?
The railroad at this point would not necessarily be supportive of the amendment as drafted. Just, I mean, again, we're supportive of the project. We're supportive of the infrastructure. But, you know, certainly the amendment is not requiring the railroad to do anything at this particular point. It just provides authorization at this point.
Thank you. Representative McCabe, it didn't wrap up at this point?
Well, more of a question, I guess, and perhaps I should have talked to Mr. O'Leary before I put this in, but I had every intention of putting it in, discussing it, getting it on the record, and then maybe even pulling the amendment. However, what if we gave you this authority and you just didn't use it until you needed it? Would that be, is that even a possibility within what we are doing? And then, say, 6 months down the road, Titan Gas said, hey, we think that we can really service Fairbanks really well with if we can get a LNG container in and get them on cars going north. Of course, you got more infrastructure build out with probably with LNG cars. But would that be something that you could use or?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, again, it as drafted currently, it would be, you know, again, our belief is that certainly the cost is greater than what's in at this particular point. Certainly, having a bond authorization available in no way is detrimental to the Alaska Railroad, to the best of my knowledge, at this point, but it's just not something I think that we could necessarily pursue unless something changed as you're describing.
One more follow-up. So as the CEO, would it help you in negotiating a anchor tenant, say for Port Mac or some sort of, and say we already have authorization from the legislature to issue a revenue bond to finish our rail? If you can provide the revenue, so to speak, or the agreement to provide the revenue, would that be helpful or?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I don't see how it would hurt. Put it like that.
Thank you, Mr. O'Leary. Any wrap up?
So the wrap up, answering one more question about the borough and being a second class borough versus our powers, as we have discussed, are a little bit limited in what we can do. I do know that the mayor is very interested. There are some other as I've mentioned to many of you before, the money, the revenue that a port generates does not come from the ships that come in and out. It comes from, especially a freight port, it comes from the square miles that you have surrounding where the ships are. All the industry that you can attract, the storage for the Connex boxes, the number of TDUs that go through there. That all generates the revenue, not necessarily the berthing of the ship and that sort of thing. So, and you know, with the deep water port and some of these big, cruise ships. I mean, bring them in, put them on a rail, send them up to Fairbanks. You know, I mean, go through Denali, spend the night in Denali, and I think that, and Mr. O'Leary and I talked about this earlier, we could open up a portion of the state that's not quite as open right now to tourism without, a lot of other stops in the way. So, anyways, that's sort of my wrap-up, unless anybody else has any questions.
Representative Toots.
Are you going to withdraw your amendment, or are you going to leave it?
Let's vote on it and see what, just put it on the record, if that's okay.
Okay, well, if we're going to vote on it, my comment is going to be, I support the idea. I had an opportunity to speak about your amendment. Actually, I was headed up to your office to talk to you when I got sidetracked. I like your idea. I like your thoughts and what you're doing it. I don't think this amendment's the way to go about it. I don't think it's going to be quite what you're looking for if you want to work with the borough and the railways and the cruise lines. I think it's a good start. I think it's putting it on the record. But I think if, like you always say, if you put a little more effort into it, or, you know, I think it could be a really good amendment. And so I'm not going to be able to support this amendment, but I support the idea.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. I echo a fair number of those as well. Having more than one port in Alaska for the main amount of goods and items that come into Alaska is certainly a good investment to look down the long run. Being a few $100 million short of the project, not being able to fund the revenue bonds until we have a more substantial port that's built out and ready for people there to come in with freight, I think is a good direction as we try to not just build it and they will come, but make sure we have a good plan moving forward. But it, certainly we do need the investment in our infrastructure to support making sure we have goods to come to Fairbanks when the Port of Anchorage falls into the water in the future and we have a backup there. Hopefully that's not for several more years once we get a Point Mac built. This is something we've looked at in Fairbanks is trucking up gas for a while. Right now, the trucks that they've built or that they're using to bring the natural gas up to Fairbanks, we are not really able to amortize on the amount of gas that we have up there right now in expansion and using LNG facilities for that gas, but it's definitely something we've looked at and talked to the railroad a fair bit, as I'm sure you guys are familiar with. So I'll be sharing the vote alongside Representative Stutes on that, but it is something we need to keep looking at in the future to move forward with. Thank you very much. Thank you. Are there any other comments for Representative Drummond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I read something into the record briefly? It actually starts at the first page of that, bottom of that first page. This is from matsugov.us. The Matsu Borough and the Alaska Railroad Corporation jointly proposed construction and development of a new rail line to connect the borough's Port McKenzie to Alaska Railroad Corporation's rail belt. The Port McKenzie rail extension involves 32 miles of additional rail line from Port McKenzie to the Alaska Railroad mainline south of Houston. Following the Environmental Policy Act review, the Surface Transportation Board authorized ARRC to build the new rail line in December 2011. Construction on the first of six construction segments began in 2012. And one more short paragraph. In 2007, the total project cost was $305.5 million. To date, the borough has secured $121 million in state legislative funding, which includes a $30 million general obligation bond. No federal funds were used for this project. And then there's a segment map, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a lot of information already available on this project, and I think it's not going to take a whole lot to get Matsu Borough to get the committee up to speed. But I agree this doesn't belong in this bill right now because it sounds like the railroad is ready to go with this bill. But I don't disagree with Representative McCabe that this is definitely an idea worth pursuing. And especially since there's been a lot of money spent on it already. And apparently money has been, I don't know about that, authorizing the railroad to proceed. I don't know if Mr. O'Leary knows anything about that. That's a pretty bold statement to be making on the Matsu website when you Google Matsu Railroad from Point McKenzie to Houston.
Popular Mr. project Chairman. There. Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Hannah?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like has been said, I support the concept of building more infrastructure, but I cannot support the amendment today. I have concerns about what it does to this bonding package ability to go forward, and I think the project that you're seeking to complete has some more complexities. I happen to represent two communities that have both struggled with building docks and having contracts with cruise lines that then have chosen to build their own docks, and the revenue expectations about the community-owned dock hasn't materialized. And so those abilities to create those long-term contracts, commitment to docks, because we've built them and they came for a while, but now they're not coming to that dock. And I know in the case, and I even though I represent cruise ship communities, I've never worked in that segment, so I get them intertwined. There aren't really that many cruise ship corporations. There's a lot of brands. And with one brand having left Seward and going to Whittier, where they're building their own dock, they're going to bring all their subsidiary brands to that because it's their owned dock when it comes online. And, you know, if we've got another major one in Seward, they're not going to commit to being an anchor tenant and then jump to Port Mac. But it's sort of, there's only about four or five big ones, parent ones, and then the rest are small, higher point value that are going to be the kind of clients, the National Geographic Cruise Line who are doing that. We're going to port where no one else is going, but they're not going to generate 200,000 passengers a year. They're going to generate tens of thousands, much higher point value. And so I just think us focusing on, you know, a hearing, the railroad hearing that the legislature is interested in some expanding railroad capabilities and opening up new areas for both tourism and other industries. But I think we've got to put a little more development time into it and not just give hollow bonding authority that we want to have it driven with some goals of you know, in 5 years that we're going to expect this to be an operational port and an operational line. And I don't think we can get there this session or in this amendment. But perhaps we'll all be back here in another year talking about those same things.
Representative McCabe and wrap up.
So thanks. Those are fair points, and I appreciate that. The keep in mind that the governor's budget has $175 million in it, which I thought, you know, the Port of Alaska got a $347 million or $374 million winning lawsuit. You know, we could take $175 million and divide it in half, give them half. They can start to do what they want to do. We can start to do what we want to do, a little bit of a revenue bond. If the railroad can attract more anchor tenants or more tenants to Seward. Anyways, it was an idea. So I appreciate the discussion, and with that, I think I'll withdraw the amendment. So,
all right, Representative McCabe, thank you for that discussion. appreciate that. So we also forgot to upload public testimony or open public testimony previously. Mr. O'Leary, you're off the hot seat until we get back to the amendment at large, or bill at large, if there's any questions specifically. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anybody online to testify? There is not. We're going to go ahead and close public testimony. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion on this bill from the committee? Thank you. With that, is there a will of the committee to take any action on this bill?
Well, package about it.
Chair Hopkins, I move to advance House Bill 366, version 32-LS1559/A from committee with attached individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing no objection, House Bill 366 passes from committee. We'll go ahead and take a brief at ease while the members sign the committee report. Welcome back, House Transportation Committee. Our next order of business will be House Bill 357 on naming the Insook Bake Bridge by Reptar. Today with us today is her aide, David Song. We'll hear the sponsor's presentation, take public comments on the legislation, and get our questions answered, and then set the bill aside for further consideration. Reptar, Mr. Song, you're already at the table. Please put yourself on the record and make any comments and provide your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from District 19 in Anchorage.
For the record, David Song, Staff Representative Tarr.
And just as a bit of background, how we sort of embarked upon this process was that last year, you may remember, we passed a bill for the Irene Weber Bridge. And there was really moving testimony about who she was and the impact she had on her community. And I came back to the office and I said, you know, I wonder if we have any bridges in our area that are unnamed that we could consider for a deserving person in our community. And so that's what led us to start this citizen engagement process and this proposal to name this unnamed bridge that crosses over the Glen Highway in Mountain View.
So for context, this is an image of the bridge in question. So here's an overhead map of the bridge. It's the overcrossing of Burgaw Street over the Glen Highway in Mountain View for those who are familiar with Anchorage. Next slide. And then here's the street view. For those who are familiar, you can see Clark Middle School building in the background over there on the left. Next slide. Okay, so now to talk about the process of how we got here. So when we put in this legislation, we wanted to ensure that this was a neighbor-led process to determine the name of this unnamed bridge. So we collaborated with community councils over across the district prior to the introduction of this legislation to ensure that we got suggestions for potential honorees. And so after gathering those names from community councils, we created an online survey for constituents to weigh in and also provide additional suggestions. Next slide. So here's the list of the names we received. I'm not going to go through every single name, but if you just read through the list, you can see there's a diverse mix of names. There are people both living and past. There are people of many different ages and from different lines of work, and from people from both sides of the political aisle. But however, all these people have done great work in our communities, and we're all worthy of consideration. So I'm just going to give some time for everyone to look through and see all of these amazing people. All right, next slide. So after collecting responses from our neighbors, we saw that the most support coalesced around Insuk Beck, who is the owner of the Mountain View Shell Station and an organizer of an annual Thanksgiving meal drive. So we also received overwhelming interest and support from the Korean community in Anchorage. And so that made us comfortable with putting this legislation forward. Next slide. So, okay, so now that we know the process through which this name was determined, I want to provide some background about Insuk Pek, or I guess with proper Korean syntax, it would be Pek Insuk. So who is this person? So Insuk is a 35-year resident of Anchorage, but originally she's from South Korea. During her time in Korea, she had the misfortune of living through the Korean War. But however, she's turned that pain of that experience into a deep desire to help others in need. She, you know, as a prominent business owner in her community, has been organizing a large-scale Thanksgiving meal drive every year for over a decade. And so this has grown to be a massive endeavor, with the 2021 meal drive serving nearly 1,000 meals. And since she's been doing this for over a decade, this amounts to thousands of meals for the Mountain View community coming directly out of her own pocket. She's been recognized for her service in the past and has received a Presidential Service Award at the 2018 Bridge Builders Gala. And finally, she's just a very active member of her church community and the Korean American community in Anchorage at large, which you'll learn more about later on in this presentation. Next slide. So she's also received extensive news coverage for her generosity, and I just wanted to share some photos from those articles. So here, here's the ADN article showing Insuk serving meals in 2017. Here's the image of Insuk serving meals in 2021. And here are some of the volunteers on the right who helped Insuk serve the hundreds of meals that she distributes. So this kind of just speaks to her influence in the community, as she's able to coordinate large numbers of volunteers every year, even during the pandemic. Next slide. And then here's just her Shell gas station, and there's the sign for her meal drive right there. Next slide. So here I'm returning to the tremendous support we've received for this legislation. So the Korean American Community of Anchorage, Inc. has mobilized in a big way in support of HB 357. They created an online petition which has 213 signatures as of yesterday. And then there were many paper petitions that should be in your packet or on basis that were distributed around Anchorage and that received another dozens of signatures for this legislation. All right.
And we've also received letters of support from the Korean American Community of Anchorage and ABC, the Anchorage Black Caucus. And then, so I'm about to wrap up, but I did want to leave you with some quotes about INSOOK that demonstrate her connection to the Mountain View community. So in her articles documenting the meal drives, Ms. Beck said, you know, she wants to give back, she wants to help feed people, and that she really cares about the neighborhood. And her son Peter gave a good quote saying, you know, she's fallen in love with the community here. It's one of the few places where people will give their last dollar to each other, and that really pulls at her heartstrings. And final quote I have kind of shows the lasting impacts that her generosity has had on people's lives. So INSOOK spoke of one of the people she served through a meal drive, saying that, you know, one man a couple years ago said that he was hungry, moved here with no job, no car, no apartment, but got food from this meal drive. And then several years later, he came back and said that he was employed, had a place to live, and actually gave her money to pay for the next year's meal drive. So next slide. In conclusion, this bill is just a great opportunity to recognize an Alaskan for years of generosity to her community. And INSOOK's story just embodies the values of what we consider the American dream. And her kindness embodies the best of what I believe Anchorage and Alaska as a whole can be. It's a place where people come together to help one another. And I did want to also add that, you know, as the story of Ms. Beck and our recently crowned Miss America have shown, you know, the Korean contributions to Anchorage and our state run deep and deserve recognition. So just please support HB 357, and we look forward to hearing any questions from the committee at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Song. Representative Tarr, anything additional to add, Representative?
Mr. Song did a great job. It's been a really fun project as far as how we've developed this legislation. Not always do you kind of do it in such a collaborative way. And so just thank you to our neighbors who weighed in. And there were, you know, other suggestions that came in. So I only share this if you have an unnamed bridge in your area or something that you might consider, because other neighbors, you know, suggested names of people I hadn't known of, but were other people who contributed in the community, and it was just really fun to learn about that and get to work with Ms. Beck and learn more about her and her contributions. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't see a fiscal note.
There should be one. The Department of Transportation did provide one. I'm not sure if it's gotten to your packet. There's mine. I'll share. And we do have Department of Transportation online if there's any questions for it or implementation of the bill.
Then
certainly. Go for it.
Ms. Tarr, Representative Tarr, have you looked at or do we have a policy through the Department of Transportation about naming bridges for living people? This is my fourth year in the legislature, and every time we've named something, it's been for someone who's dead. Not that I'm wishing. I have read about her in the newspaper on a number of occasions and been very impressed, and not to take away from her, but I am a little hesitant to get into a naming convention for living people, especially if we have any formal policies about it. But I've not looked at naming anything, so don't know if you have any background in that.
Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Hannon, yes, we did ask about that, and it's okay. You can pick someone who's living or past. You might recall that Representative Gillum has a bill to name a bridge after Representative Don Young, and that was one of the things in this first early phases of learning about it, and so it prompted us to double-check, you know, what would be acceptable. And then when we started soliciting names from neighbors, we had that conversation again. But we were really committed to this organic process. And so, you know, we decided in this circumstance it would be somewhat unusual, because it is more true that we do it when people have passed. But you know, we tried to stay true to that neighbor-led, neighbor-suggested, neighbor-selected process. And so that's what took us here. But it is okay. We did double-check about that. And on the fiscal note, what we wanted to just share is, you know, we know there's other legislation under consideration, and that this committee heard it, that would allow nonprofit groups to donate towards the cost. You know, it's not a significant cost, but for the signage, and we're supportive of that legislation. And, you know, the only reason I want to mention it in this context is, thankfully, you know, it's a modest fiscal note, but I do think in my experience now with some of the more recent activities around naming things that it can be a really positive community experience. And, you know, a lot of the groups want to participate and, you know, sort of have a role in that. So, you know, I think for that reason, if that other legislation passes and we create that opportunity, it could create those kind of collaborations, which could be really positive and I think fun and empowering for folks. But, you know, absent that, of course, this modest fiscal note will be with the bill. But we do, you know, we support that and the other effort.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Yeah. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. More of a comment. I just want to say what a pleasure it is to be naming something after a Korean, part of our Korean community, which I used to live in Muldoon. Huge, I don't know how to say it, but just a huge community of supporters and people that support each other and support everybody. And it's a pleasure to be able to name something in an uplifting way. Thank you.
Certainly, Representative McCabe. Representative Cron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually appreciate us looking at people that are living. No disrespect to anybody that's passed away, but it just seems like it's more uplifting when we the person is still alive. They know that, you know, they've been appreciated. So I appreciate this. Thank you.
A lot of appreciation going around the circle. Representative Drummond.
Keep it coming. We love it.
On that subject, the Anchorage School District's policy is not to name any school buildings except anyone after anyone who's living. Several years ago, we named the child care facility attached to the King Career Center after a living person, but that was not an entire building. The municipality of Anchorage regularly names things after living people. Distinctly different policies. So I'm glad Representative Tarr has that straightened out. And my neighborhood of Spinard has hundreds of Korean businesses squirreled into the most interesting places. They are everywhere in Anchorage. And I'm thinking about an unnamed bridge in my neighborhood. So thank you for that thought.
Korean barbecue is the best.
Any other additional questions? Thank you for that. We do have Key Getty, president of the Korean American Community of Anchorage. Key, are you available? Can you hear us online?
Yes, I am here.
Thank you very much, Ms. Getty. If you could please put yourself on the record, state your name and your affiliation, and provide your testimony.
My name is Key Getty. I'm the current board president of Korean American Community of Anchorage, which is a 501c3 organization founded in 1973. And I am also a semi-retired CPA from BDO, which is an international CPA firm. First off, I would like to thank everybody who worked hard to introduce and advocate this House Bill 357. Mr. Song stated, Ms. Beck contributed tremendously through thick and thin. She had been recognized by many organizations. One thing that wasn't mentioned was that she was also awarded appreciation award by the Korean American Community of Anchorage back in, I want to say, maybe 2015 or 16. And I would like to add to what was said so far about her contribution to our community. We all do honorable deeds based on what we encounter at times. But for her to be consistently every year, despite the pandemic, the Great Depression we had in 2007 through 2010 or 11. And especially right now, with so many news that we hear about hate and violence against the Asian right now. And so I think it's a great timing to recognize somebody who is an Asian American. And just to also recognize what the Korean American community has done. It hasn't been said much about our community. As I mentioned, it was founded in 1973. Recognizing her novel actions would greatly not only highlight her contribution, but also what the Korean American community has done as a community. And many of you might not have heard this, but we as an ethnic community have contributed for the past 20 years scholarships to the Anchorage School District graduates. And a lot of times when you mention about the scholarship program, people think that we are awarding Korean American students. No, not at all. It was never that way. It was without any sort of discrimination. We awarded every year between 10,000 to $20,000 dollars for the students. And thus far, we in total will surpass a quarter million dollars. I think we're reaching about over $300,000 by this year. As we speak, we're in the middle of organizing this event. We've been circulating the applications and donation requests. While we are offering this scholarship to any Anchorage School District students, the funding solely comes from the Korean American community, small business owners, civic organizations, Korean American churches, and so on. And so I wanted to make sure that everybody knows about that. And in the past, we also had even elderly people. We have a senior association where we have a group of people who clean Sheep Creek every spring for many years, although during the pandemic that's been stopped. We have many people contributing in many different ways as a member of the Korean American community for the betterment of our city. And I myself have volunteered as a, currently I'm the board president for my third year. But I volunteered for the Alaska Center, the Alaska Center Education Fund, Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, Bridge Builders of Anchorage, School District, Habitat for Humanity, UAA as a math tutor, accounting lab tutor, and so on. And even right now, we have Korean War veterans who are willing to donate toward the Ukraine victims, war victims. And our activities throughout the year never cease. We generally put together about 15 to 20 community events a year. And we do not have paid staff other than one part-time office manager. I myself put in about 50 hours a week of my time And so we were able to operate for so many years just based on the volunteer effort and their time and money. And so thus far, we have received no meaningful recognition for our contribution as Korean American community. And so naming this breach after Ms. Beck would definitely be a rewarding experience for all the contributions that we make as collectively as Korean Americans. So I would like to enthusiastically urge our representatives to pass this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Getty. I appreciate your testimony and sincerely appreciate the work that you do for Anchorage and all that the Korean community in Anchorage provides for the diversity and the strength of the Alaska as a whole. So thank you for your work as the president of the Korean American community and for your support of this legislation. Do you have any questions for Ms. Getty and her testimony? Seeing none, thank you again, Ms. Getty. Appreciate it very much for coming in and calling in today. At this point, we're going to take public testimony on this piece of legislation. I don't see anybody in the room. Do we have anybody online? There's nobody online for public testimony. Go ahead and close public testimony. Thanks very much for that. Representative Tarr, with nothing further on this bill today specifically, is there any wrap-up you would like to make for the committee?
Just thank you, Mr. Song did such a great job presenting the bill today. So I just want to say good job and thank you for that. And thank you for the comments from committee members. You know, we look forward to any suggestions you might have and appreciate the opportunity to have presented to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Certainly, Representative Tarr, Mr. Song, thank you for the grassroots work you did to come up with a name and develop that community-led effort. That's a good idea for future naming efforts. Do we have any other questions for members of the committee? All right, seeing none, at this time we're going to go ahead and set aside House Bill 357. Any amendments are going to be due to my office by Monday at noon. That's Monday, March 21st. And with that, we'll go ahead and cancel our Thursday, March 17th hearing to free up your afternoon a little bit. And so our next meeting will be a week from today, March 22nd at 1 p.m. right here in this room. With no further questions, we will go ahead and find that we have no further business and adjourn at 2:20 p.m. Thanks, everybody.